Welcome to Standing in the Sunlight with Cynthia Rose. We are all on an ever-unfolding unique journey. Join Cynthia Rose as she begins her unique perspective to all that is meaningful. Topics and personalities that support your path, bringing inspiration and passion and heart-centered ways to live a more fulfilling life. A down-to-earth and uplifting sharing of what it means to be spiritual, creative, and living life to the fullest by standing in the sunlight. Born an intuitive medium, Cynthia Rose is also an ordained minister, singer, astrologer, educator, and writer. She has studied the intuitive and healing arts for over 40 years. Rise up and stand in your sunlight now with Cynthia Rose.
Well, it's good evening for me this time. Good afternoon, good morning, if you're listening live or you're listening later on playback. So happy you're here today. If you're wanting to connect with me, there is a Standing in the Sunlight page on Facebook. You can also find me at Cynthia Rose Medium on Facebook, Cynthia Rose Medium on Twitter and Instagram. And this show, if you want to listen again, there is a YouTube playlist, Cynthia Rose Medium on YouTube, where you can listen to it. So I'm excited to be here today and coming to you from England today. And I'm excited to be here. Been waiting to have this guest on the show. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Her name is Elena Manes. She's an award-winning independent documentary director, writer, producer, whose honors include 6 Emmy Awards, a George Foster Peabody Award, 2 Directors Guild of America Awards, and 9 Golden Eagles. She's written, directed, and produced series and documentaries for CBS, PBS, ABC, and the Discovery Channel, including The Amazing Animal Mind, and the PBS primetime special, The Music Instinct, which led to the writing of her first book, The Power of Music. She lives in New York City, and I will mention this again at the end of the show. You can visit Elena Manes at www.souldogbook.com. I'd like to welcome Elena to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to read your book and talk to you about Brio in your book.
Well, I'm always glad to talk about Brio. He means a great deal in my life, and that's a major reason why I wrote the book.
Yeah, I have to say I really enjoyed it. I really felt your authentic connection to him and your dedication to the relationship with him. It was a really moving book. I really did enjoy it.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a great deal to me to hear that it, you know, has an effect on people. And I also wanted to write it to get a message across about, you know, changing the way some people at least view animals. After this experience that I had with Brio and deeper communication with my dog, I really came to feel that it's important to see our animals not as pets or servants sort of there at our beck and call, but rather as equal beings who have their own feelings and thoughts and spirits, and that they should be treated with respect. And even as our teachers, I think we have so much to learn from them.
Absolutely. I totally agree. They are so important. That's the one thing I miss my furry family right now. I'm away from them.
So, oh, I understand that.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, I have a soul dog connection too. It's just so special, that beautiful unconditional love. And he's taught me a lot, and I have a kitty who's taught me a lot. They are, I think you're right, they are magnificent, and seeing them as equals, it's so time, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, I do feel there's a shift underway, and we can talk more about that, but there's also still much too much even abuse and dismissal, if you will, of, you know, what animals have to offer.
Oh, yeah, that part is, that breaks my heart. Yeah. So, We've talked a little bit already about why you wrote the book, but I first wanted to say also, you were a journalist. I love that you went into this in that mode of sort of presenting different points of view, different ways people think, and then your own. And I thought that was, it's also needed. Maybe some people reading this might realize, excuse me, there really is more to my pet.
Well, yes, I mean, I came to this as a big skeptic, really. I mean, I'm really the last person, frankly, that I would have expected to have written this book or, a book about communicating with animals telepathically. That was really something that, I hadn't really given much thought to, and I was trained as a journalist, as a skeptic, and trained not to believe anything if I didn't have empirical proof and multiple sources and all that. So it was really a big journey for me and an experience of coming to really having a conviction that it's interspecies communication is possible, and also through telepathy, and even after physical death. So this was quite a journey I took with Bria.
Or he initiated with you.
Exactly. I believe that he did. But I did, I really, I wanted, I got, well, I can go into what whetted my interest, but over the years, I got more and more evidence that there really was something to telepathic communication with animals. And the more I investigated, the more I wanted to try to see if there really was any empirical proof. And there actually is really fascinating science now about non-human animal intelligence and feelings and extrasensory abilities. So the book also gets into some of that as well.
Yeah, you might think because I'm a medium that I'm just completely open to everything, but I'll tell you, back years ago, I had an experience out in the open ocean with dolphins that made no sense to me whatsoever. And I actually thought the boat captain was, I thought, well, that's a little weird. She said I could ask the dolphins question if they came to us out in the wild. We didn't go follow them or anything. And I thought, well, okay, I'm open-minded, but I was fairly skeptical. And I asked them a question. And when I realized they were down below circling me, and when I asked the question, I felt it was like 1,000 babies laughing. This joy that went through me, and I thought, whoa, well, that must be a yes. And then I went home and talked to a friend of mine who said, oh, it's a thing, Cynthia. It's a thing. And I was like, well, I don't read those books. I don't know what that is. So I could never put it to rest. It was like, I know I experienced it, but so I think if we're as long as we're, I think skeptical is good. It's the open-minded. If we can be open that, just because we don't know something doesn't mean it's not happening, you know?
I totally agree. I mean, I'm not trying to convert anybody, but just to tell my own experience, and maybe I'm more believable because I started as a skeptic, and at least, as you say, open people's minds to listening to their animals in different ways. And, having the personal experience is nothing more convincing than actually having the experience for oneself is, really feeling that connection across time and space with another being.
Yes. And I mentioned the dolphins because I know in your book you mentioned a dolphin human communication that's been going on for years.
Yes, I mean, I spoke in the book. I mentioned that I interviewed a well-known dolphin researcher, quite illustrious scientist, who said that she's totally convinced that they have telepathic abilities, but she can't go public with it for fear of, jeopardizing her academic career. So, I believe that that's true of quite a few scientists who obviously with their research have a lot of experience with these animals, and but they're just not at the point where they are ready to go public with anecdotal evidence.
Yes. So why don't we start with, you know, I don't know if something you'd like to share from the book. Do you want to share about the beginning with Brio, the rough beginning, or what would you like to share just to start a little bit about
a
teaser?
That's the place to start, because that's sort of, you know, unlike many people, I had decided to get a puppy because I was sort of in a midlife crisis. My career was going well, but a relationship had ended with a man, and also I had had a near-fatal car crash on a film shoot. So I thought, you know, there must be more to life than, you know, working like a demon and, you know, not having anything else in my life. So I thought I would get a puppy. I'd always loved animals, but not, you know, just as pets. That's how I thought of them. And I thought getting a puppy would be there for companionship and comfort, and it would be really easy, and it wouldn't really change my life very much. But as soon as I brought Brio home, I realized that that did not seem to be happening in quite the way I had imagined. He was very independent-minded. He didn't always obey me. I felt I really couldn't communicate with him, despite bringing in really great trainers, dog trainers. So, you know, my researcher mode as a journalist, I'd heard about people who called themselves animal communicators, who could psychically tap into animals' feelings and thoughts. So I thought, oh, you know, I did a little research and I found somebody on the West Coast who had a decent reputation. So I called this woman and asked her to read Brio. I didn't tell her anything about him or me, really, except for his name and his breed. And she came up with this amazingly accurate reading describing my apartment from his point of view and how he viewed navigating around the furniture. And she described streets that we walked on and which ones he preferred, and really reported on his personality in a very accurate way that really rang true to me. So that really whetted my interest. So I started, you know, talking to some other communicators. I sort of wanted to see if they'd agree with each other, you know, testing them. And I never really gave them much information. And so I started meeting some other communicators that basically, you know, were consistent with the first one. And that started to convince me a bit more. And I also was in a kind of fortunate position as a TV producer. So I persuaded the network I was working for to let me do what turned out to be a couple of stories touching on telepathic communication between animals and people. So the first one was actually a whole documentary you mentioned in my bio, which looked at animal intelligence and minds, and part of that included a segment on telepathy. So I got an animal psychic, the same one who had first read Brio, to come to New York and read Diane Sawyer's dog. She was the correspondent on the story. And again, it was very, very accurate. We had videotaped Diane's dog at her home, which Diane was not there. I mean, I had never seen her home, and the psychic had certainly never seen her home. But the psychic described precisely what the dog did in the yard, down to trees and a stream, and described the house. And then after that, we had the psychic meet the dog in a hotel room with Diane, and she came up with more very accurate points, including she said that the dog had had some traumatic experience as a puppy, that he'd fallen and felt dizzy and he was scared, and Diane at that point said, well, he did fall into a swimming pool when he was a puppy. So that was pretty affirmative that something accurate was going on in this reading. And then I also did another story for the network. I got a psychic to, I wanted to get a psychic to go out and read a horse that was entered in the Belmont Stakes, the third leg of the Triple Crown of thoroughbred horse racing. And the only horse whose trainer would allow me to do this was the trainer of the longest shot of all in Belmont Stakes history, a 70-1 shot. His name was Saraba. So the day before the race, we went out with
a seven. Trainer. Did you say 70-1 shot?
70-1.
Wow.
And there had never been a horse in the Belmont Stakes with such long odds.
That's long odds, yeah.
I was not thrilled at this, but, you know, I didn't have any choice, so.
Oh, you know what, Elena, I'm sorry. We're getting queued up for a break, so hold that story. We'll carry on after the break. Stretch your legs, grab a glass of water. We'll be back with Elena Manes talking about her soul dog, Brio. Some great stories.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com. M-E-T-T-A. mindfulnessmusic.com.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, talk, touch their hair. Details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones we carry with us every day. Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susie G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Elena Manes, and she was just beginning to tell us about the 70-1 horse.
Yes, 70-1 odds, a horse entered in the Belmont Stakes, for which I got a psychic. I was doing a story about getting a psychic reading of this horse on the day before the race, and so I brought an animal communicator out to the racetrack, and she met the horse, whose name was Saraba, and there was she announced at one point that he says he's going to win, and everybody's jaw kind of dropped. Even the trainer was really surprised.
And,
you have said, you know, why does he think he's going to win? And the animal communicator said he wants to do it, and he's sure he can. He wants to do it for you, his trainer, and his owner. So, you know, I thought, oh, the story's not going to be working too well. But we went home, and then the race was the next day, so I'm at home watching TV. And it was the year that a famous horse named War Emblem was expected to win the Belmont and therefore win the Triple Crown. It was a big deal. So we're watching the race, and nobody paid any attention to Sarapa, the 70-1 shot. The announcer barely mentioned him for most of the race, but then they got to the far turn, and all of a sudden the announcer is kind of yelling, like, Sarapa is moving up. And Sarapa is moving up and passing all the horses, including War Emblem. And then the announcer screams, Sarapa is ahead. He's winning. He's won the Belmont Stakes. So now everybody, including me, was completely shocked.
So you didn't have a ticket on the race?
No, I didn't. Everybody asked me that.
But, yeah.
I mean, I had no expectation, I have to say, really. I mean, not that I didn't like the animal psychic, but, you know, I really didn't really expect this was going to happen. But it did. History was made. So that was pretty amazing. And then actually on the way back, well, it was the day before when we had filmed her reading of Sarapa, my dog, Brio, was actually in the hospital at the time, which, you know, I hadn't told the psychic at all, but, you know, I was sort of discouraged the day before about this whole thing. I thought, oh, I'll ask her to read Brio. So I said, can you tell me anything about my dog? And I just gave her his name and breed again. And she said, well, there's something wrong with his stomach, and he's in the hospital, and he has a woman vet who he likes very much. All of that was true. He had pancreatitis, and he had a woman vet, and he was very sick in the veterinary hospital. So that was yet another, you know, notch in the on the marks for the animal communicators. And I really, really was becoming convinced that something was going on here that I couldn't explain by ordinary means of the physical five senses or, you know, empirical evidence in the materialistic sense. So I really was pretty convinced. And then I had another experience with Brio, who, when he was 8 years old, he collapsed on the street, and I spent a fortune on all Western medical tests known to man, and they said he had a degenerative neurological disease and would never walk normally again. And I was desperate, of course, so somebody I knew recommended a different animal communicator who also did long-distance energy healing. So I thought, well, I have nothing to lose, so I called this woman. And the first conversation, you know, she was quiet, I guess, feeling Brio for some time, and she said, there's nothing wrong with his back. I'm going to do some work on him today in a few more sessions, but you're going to have your dog back. He's going to be okay. And sure enough, he could walk and he ran, and we had several more years of a great active life.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
You know, by then I was pretty much a believer.
Yeah, that's just beautiful. Well, and I think it's important for people to know that. And some of the communication for people is just, you know, they think something's supposed to flash in front of them. For some people, it's just knowing. And I think there's far more people that could probably naturally tune in, but maybe they haven't been given permission. They don't realize. You know, I don't know, when I was growing up, there wasn't a thing called animal communication. It was just a given thing. You either listen to them or you don't. So, you know, it's like some people listen well to the animals. That's how I understood it.
And I mean, I never heard of this growing up, frankly, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's something that I just think it's beautiful that it's opening up more and more people. And I'll tell you, there's nothing better for me than knowing that when my soul dog crosses to the other side, that he will greet me when I go. Because,
oh, I know.
You know, it's like, and there's sometimes, and there's been times, many a time when a loved one comes through, you know, they put their dog or their horse or their cat in front of them. And, you know, or one time, I'm not even going to tell you about me until you acknowledge my German Shepherd. Okay. And that might be me. That might be me if I'm, when I'm coming through from the other side, because there's just, I have got such depth of communication from my husband. I have two cats and two dogs, and you know, we each have a cat and a dog, and the experiences I've had with both of them, it's just, I just know, it's like they just, I hear something and I know. It's like I said to my husband, now we don't have mice in our house or anything, but this summer I said to him, you know, oh, the big Maine Coon. I said, I think he's telling me that there's a mouse. And I think he's telling me he's going to bring the mouse. And now he's not, they don't, these aren't cats, don't do that. They're spoiled, rotten cats. They don't, in fact, if a mouse comes in the house, they're like, oh, hi, go ahead, hang out in the corner. They just, it happened once to us and they wouldn't chase it or anything. So I said, I think he's telling me that. And I had to go off to the office and work, and came home that night. My husband said, guess what he brought to the door? He said, he was telling you it's a mouse. So it's just more and more, it happens all the time. And I think the stronger our love bond, then the stronger the connection with the spirit world.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I can't say that I'm a professional animal communicator by any means, but over the, you know, this whole experience I know has opened me up more, and, you know, I've become better able to read them, and I have another dog now and a cat, and, you know, I'm pretty good at least sensing what's going on in some way with them, much more than I used to be. And I think the greatest gift I got, you know, maybe from the experience with Brio was in some ways after his physical passing, because the communication, of course, I had the translators, the animal communicators helping me, but the messages that came through them from him were so amazing. I mean, they related details of what I was doing and where I'd been, and things about my life that there was absolutely no way the communicators could have known, you know, that weren't even in my mind when I was talking to the communicators. And I also consulted a medium who gave amazing readings of Brio. So, I mean, that was such a gift to know that that connection endured, that consciousness endures, and his spirit is there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that he could be sitting right beside you sometimes.
Right. I mean, and they described that. I mean, they would describe, you know, I was sitting in my office, and they describe from Brio, you know, the wood trim in the office and how the office was laid out. I mean, I certainly was not thinking about the wood trim or had even noticed it particularly, you know.
Wow. You know, I have to say, also, what was really, really beautiful is that when you came to know that his time was becoming shortened, it was really moving, you know, taking him back to the beach and his love of the beach. And, you know, that must have been a knowing for you that he loved the beach.
Oh, it was. I mean, I did know that. And, you know, as I describe in the book, I had in some ways resisted that particular trip because he was really not so well at that point, and traveling was difficult. But, you know, one of the animal communicators really persuaded me that he knew I was going and that I had to take him. And my God, I'm so glad I did, because it was, you know, it was such a beautiful experience, which I will never, ever forget.
And neither will he. Yes, a special connection. But also another thing that I found, which was quite beautiful, is that, you know, a lot of times we put animals down and, you know, we leave the room and then strangers come and we're not there with them. And I just thought it was beautiful, the whole process that you went through with him. And it's like you were, you know, allowing him to die in a conscious way and be conscious with him.
Yes, I mean, I'm so glad I did that. I mean, with my parents' animals, for example, I mean, it was a different era, but, you know, they were taken to the vet, you know, it was a different thing. But, you know, I couldn't do that with Brio. I mean, I just never left him. I held him the whole day before the vet came and during his passing, and I describe in the book the amazing experience I had with his energy leaving his body. I could really feel it spiraling out.
Oh, yeah. You've got to tell people about that. That was really, really lovely you put that in there.
That was incredible. I mean, that was so, if anything can convince anybody to have this physical experience in one's own body. So I had arranged for one of the animal communicators to be on the phone with me when the vet came, just as support for me, I guess, because I was, as I said, just holding him the whole time. And obviously it's such a difficult experience to go through, but I cannot tell people enough that, you know, it's a beautiful experience. So I will never, ever regret doing it, and I would do it again any day. But I digress, you know, so I'm holding him, and the vet comes and asks me if I'm ready, and Brio's head was on my chest, and I was just holding him so tight. And when the injection went in, first they, as you know, they tranquilized him, but when the final injection went in, I felt this amazing spiraling feeling. I mean, I felt I was like in a centrifuge that was spiraling out and up, and I didn't know what it was. I just hung on to his body like for dear life. You know, I sort of felt I was going with him, really. And then it just kind of subsided, and I knew he was gone out there somehow. And, you know, the animal communicator, Alicia, who was on the phone with me, I asked and said, "What was that?" And she had felt it too, and I know other animal communicators since then have told me they have experienced that. But Alicia said it was his energy coming out of his body and expanding. You know, that when we come into physical life, as I understand it, the energy of the spirit is kind of compressed, and when it goes out again, it expands. That really helped me to have that explanation. But, you know, even telling that story now gives me chills because it was so unbelievably powerful.
It's just amazing. And that also that you were there with him. I mean, I was just like tearful at that part. I was like, it made me also think of a friend of mine years ago, had a dog. I think the dog was 17, Rhodesian Ridgeback. And the dog's hind legs hadn't been working for, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months, I don't know. But I was helping look after the dog on this day, and then I took the dog to the vet. And I don't know how I even got him in the car. I must have got someone to help me. And got into the vet, and, you know, the vet, I can't remember what it was there for, but he said to me, "This dog should be put down." And I said, "Well, he's not my dog, so I can't give you permission to do that." And, you know, good on him. This gentleman said, he's been a loyal friend to me for 17 years. I can be with him for the last months of his life, and he's not ready to go. And so he carried him every day, you know, however how many times he needed to, outside. He'd carry him out, up steps, down steps. And but he was like, "No, he's not ready to go." And I remember the vet kind of chewing on me and getting quite upset with me. And, you know, and I thought, it's interesting that we think we should decide. But he wasn't going to do it until he felt his dog had let him know he was ready to go. And I think
I felt the same way. I mean, a lot of vets, several vets told me it was time or indicated it was time. You know, not all of them, but, you know, I did get that and from other people, friends, you know, but I was not going to do it till I really felt that Brio felt it was time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that is something that maybe with time will change. People will think more that way. And, you know, I certainly know that the whole attitude with animals is not completely changed, but it's something that, you know, I even have a symbol or a way of knowing when people come through and they let me know that there was animals in the house, but they didn't have anything to do with them. You know, like, okay, I didn't pick that animal, is not on their lap. And then there's other times they're right on the lap. So, oh, they had it's what I call the old fashioned way of how we think about animals. And it's right. Like, you know, it was a very common thing. There was a lot of misconceptions. So they had germs or whatever have you. So, oh, and there I'm getting cued for our last break. So just a couple of minutes, and we're having a great time talking with Elena Manis, or I am. I'm saying we are. And we're talking about her book, Soul Dog. So hold on, we'll be right back.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Tune in to the Practical Intuitive, Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more, all to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos. A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit stoptextstoprex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back. Where were we going? What were we talking about?
I talked about Brio's passing and, you know, how glad I am that, you know, I was with him through it all and that I hadn't done it too early, you know, helped him with the transition too early. So I think that's really important for people to think about.
So important. I know this is off the topic of this, but your book, The Power of Music, is that what it was?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I read that. I have a music background, so.
Oh.
It's funny. I did not know that Pythagoras believed the soul of a human could be reborn in the body of an animal.
Yes, I think that was transmigration of the soul, I believe. And Plato did also, and I did a little research on that for this book, The Soul Dog. And I was not aware of all that either initially, but it's fascinating that, you know, these ideas have been around for a long time, and they're not sort of crazy, you know, woo-woo things. I mean, the great philosophers of history thought about this.
Yeah, because I swear our other little dog thinks she was a cat before. There's so many things that she does that we go, look, you're not a cat. What are you doing?
Rio actually was obsessed with cats. I had to get a cat for him. The cat is still here. It's now trained my second standard poodle.
So you still have your cat?
I do.
And yeah, well, maybe he wanted to make sure he didn't leave you completely alone, too.
I believe that's true. I think he gave the cat some instructions.
Yeah, we think we're in charge, but we're really the servants to them.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Yes, yes. So, the whole idea of reincarnation, it's not something that I believe or not believe in with animals, but I found myself saying, I was doing a demonstration of mediumship in hotel staff, had a kitten there. And so I was open and was holding that kitten. And so someone said, well, she's trying to think about what to name it. I think it was something like Angel, or I don't remember what it was. And I said, Angel. And she said, oh, I said, well, you've had this cat before. And she said, my cat that just died was called Angel. Mm. And I thought, well, that's an interesting correlation there. So, you know, where did that name come from? I don't know. It just popped in. I'm not sure if it was Angel, but I just remember that the name I said, and I felt like this cat had come to her for a specific reason. What I said, she was like, oh, yeah, that was my last cat's name. So that's not uncommon. I know I'm not special in saying that. I think that's happened. But I certainly don't just say those things. You know, it just bubbled out of my mouth. So.
Wow.
And if we, animals are sentient, or animals were sentient, if we can reincarnate, then of course animals could reincarnate.
Yeah, I'm absolutely open to that. I mean, I really wanted, you know, Brio, of course, to reincarnate right away. And, you know, I missed him physically so much. But, you know, I tried to find a puppy. I looked for clues, you know, to try to find the right puppy. And I did get another black standard poodle about 4 months after Brio had passed. But I don't actually believe he's Brio reincarnated. He's a very different spirit. In his own right, and you know, I really feel a connection with Brio. I know he's with me, and you know, I'm content with that at this point. And you know, maybe he'll come back physically at some way at some point. Who knows? But I'm certainly very open to the idea of reincarnation. As a child, I remember believing in it very strongly, and I think, you know, in Western cultures, adults kind of talk children out of that kind of belief. It's interesting that in Asia, you know, it's very common to have children who believe they are reincarnated. And
yes, not yeah, I read that research by Dr. Ian Stevenson as well. It was fascinating.
It is very fascinating. And that research is still being continued by his successor, association with the University of Virginia. So it's really fascinating research.
Yeah, that there was one in there, I don't know if you recall it, but there was one that was so interesting about the, I think she was 11 or 12-year-old girl who'd been born with a leg shape that was not common. If you were born with a malformation, it was on an angle and it was just, you wouldn't see it like that. They had certain statistics that said this wasn't the way it looked, and she had certain markings. And I think there was, I don't know if you recall her, but she remembered her past life, and she had the names of people in another town, and she remembered that she used to walk the railroad tracks with her mother, and I guess a train had come in and taken her legs or something. And so I remember that I was reading that story and thinking, wow. And so they took her to the other town, and because she kept talking about her other mom, and met up with all the family, and she recognized them. She knew their names. That was just fascinating to me. And then one of the good things about that story, she was a poor family. I think something about they were able to get her a prosthesis for her leg or something. So with some of the funding or something like that. But that story was fascinating to read about that.
Really, that's very powerful. And you know, I've heard others that, you know, are very powerful. I mean, it's hard to explain how these things could, these memories could be, you know, because, again, it's something you can't explain by the ordinary, within the terms of physical senses. You know, I mean, there are just American cases. I remember reading something about a boy who felt he was had been a pilot in World War II, and they checked all the evidence and all the details of this person he thought he had been checked out was all correct. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more common. And, you know, it's people ask me all the time about past lives, and I think, well, I don't think we understand time the way it really operates. So our minds have to say past life, but I wonder if time isn't just something happening all at once, but I can't possibly keep that in my mind. I don't understand that.
All right, I don't think we can with our human minds. I mean, and certainly, I mean, quantum physics is all about, you know, time and space not being exactly real in the sense that we perceive it, you know, perceive it.
Yeah, we're limited by it. You know, I once did a reading for a lady. Just, you might find this kind of interesting, but I just had this incredible energy with me, and I was quite disturbed by the fact that I knew the, I think it was like, I know this energy was male or something, but it's coming to me as this energy, and it's not something a way I would work. But everything I said, she was, oh, absolute sense, makes absolute sense. And I said, I'm sorry, but I don't know the connection here. But it was profound stuff coming through. And she said, well, you've been talking to my dog. And I was like, what? There was so much information about what had gone on, how the dog had passed. But honestly, in that, I think maybe it was because if I had known at that time that I could get that much information from a dog, maybe I would have blocked it. And there's an intelligence for those in the spirit, I think, that will say, you know, how can we work around this? So I just felt this beautiful, enormous energy and just kept sharing all this information. And then she said to me, really, it's my dog. And I thought, wait a minute, hold on a minute. So I stopped her. We went through all of the information. I was sure that that had to be wrong. But and I'm sure I mentioned a dog, like what they look like. I just didn't know that was the dog that I was talking to.
That's an incredible story.
Yeah. It was, and she was just crying her eyes out, and she was like, I needed this so much and everything. And I was just like, okay, well, that you learn every day, you learn something, hopefully.
I love that story.
Yeah. Oh, and I have to tell you, I love that you mentioned Lawrence Anthony in here, because when I read The Elephant Whisperer, I was in tears reading that, his ability to communicate with the elephants. I was so moved by it. I put a CD out. The first song on the CD is a song dedicated to Lawrence Anthony called Angel in Disguise. And I wrote that song for him. So he had my heart right there with that too, because I certainly couldn't be a bush girl doing what he did. But just the dedication to help all those animals.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a great story about how after he had passed away, a group of elephants who were, you know, way, way, way from where Anthony lived, you know, out in a range or, you know, you know, they were protected or whatever. But anyway, they, the whole group of them, these elephants that he had rescued, walked for miles and miles to come to gather near his home and just stayed there for a couple of days, obviously sort of paying homage to the man
yes.
who had rescued them.
Yes, and I've had, I had his widow on this show as well.
Oh.
Yeah, she called in from South Africa and had a conversation. So, yeah, I thought, well, that's kind of serendipitous, that whole synchronicity there. Excuse
animals
me.
Animals have such capacity, you know, I mean, and we're just learning more and more about it, you know. Both, you know, even in the physical world here, their emotional capacity for feelings like grief and joy and, you know, loyalty and compassion, and plus their intelligence and cognitive abilities and, you know, the spirit. I mean, that's in the realm of the invisible, but I certainly believe it's there.
Yeah, and yes, yet it's really what really matters in life. It's, and mostly those things are what's moving, what's, you know, even in the practice of something like evidential mediumship, that's great that you can get a whole bunch of details, but when you get something that is so personal to someone, that little piece might not be really, you know, wouldn't be considered evidential in a blind study, but certainly is what really touches someone's heart. And I know I'm that way.
I am too. So, I mean, that's really, I hope that the book does touch hearts and, you know, opens people up to consider all the possibilities of communicating and connecting with the animals who share our lives, and even those who don't in the wild or whatever, you know.
Yeah, for all the listeners, this is it's a really enjoyable book. I highly recommend it. Are you doing any book signings somewhere that you want to mention, or just direct them again to the website? Or
sure. Well, first of all, the website again is www.souldogbook.com, and there are links on there to order, which are really easy to buy it. That'd be great. I've tweaked your interest, and I am doing some events in the New York City Northeast area. If you're in that area, I'm doing an event in New York on December 19th at Tibet House with Robert Thurman, Professor Robert Thurman, the famous Buddhist scholar who wrote the foreword to the book. So that should be really interesting. And all the upcoming events are on the website. And I'm doing another one this coming day in Stonington, Connecticut. But again, you can check the website and see a listing of the events coming up.
Yeah, that would be great. Any chance you'll come to the Tattered Cover in Denver?
I would absolutely love to. In fact, somebody mentioned that to me. I would love to do that.
Maybe
we can talk about that further.
Yeah, that would be great to have you there, and lovely place there, and then we could meet in person. That would be lovely.
Oh, I would love to do that.
Yeah. So we've just got about 2 minutes left. anything last thing that comes up for you, or?
Well, I'll just summarize. You know, there are really two themes that I hope come through in the book. One, we've discussed both. One is to really open people's minds to considering non-human animals in a new way as equals and our teachers, and they carry such great gifts for us. And secondly, to really open up to the idea that, you know, spirits of all beings, including our animal companions, do endure. I am so convinced of that. And what a gift when one really comes to know that. It changes everything, you know, one's perspective of existence and the nature of reality. And in my case, a dog led me to really change my view of the biggest things of all, in life and spirit.
Yeah, they're such joy bringers. They teach us that we're supposed to be joyful. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Elena. I'd love to connect and figure that out. Well, email best or something. We'll talk to you after the show.
Sure. Please email me, and we can always talk again. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Happy holidays to you.
Okay. And you.
Bye-bye.